Yeah, that's what the government script said.
The Freedom Fiends, broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker on Pod Bay 2A at Intergalactic Prairie Studios, a mile above sea level, in the Alpha Centauri region. And we alter your locus coeruleus by bombasting your brainwaves with rejuvenative radio waves to warm your synapses and cook them to a tasty 450 degrees Fahrenheit. Oh, Bill Buepert, can you feel it? Can you feel it working, Bill Buepert?
I can feel it. And I am also a mile high in Alpha Mayab and down way south of you. And it's again an honor to come on the Fiend Show to philosophically terraform the planet one disobedient surf at a time.
And you know there's somebody sitting in some like cubicle in some NSA or TSA or DHS fusion center listening to the show live right now and saying, wait, they just said they're terrorizing the universe. Like some guy that was hired off a pizza box. And you've had run-ins with these people. I mean, you know, it always goes back to me with that. I mean, there are probably some brilliant people working at the high levels in those jobs, but the average guy who's collecting the data and, you know, handing the stuff that should be red flag over to his smarter bosses. You know, it kind of reminds me of that thing in Boston Tea Party's book, Moulin Labe, about where the FBI agent, you know, the hotshot FBI agent is going to fly somewhere for work. And the TSA agent's like, sir, I need you to take off your shoes. I need to search your shoes. And he says to her, you're not smart enough to search my shoes. Yeah.
Oh, that'd be hilarious. But, you know, here's what I also think, though, Michael, is that everything we do in America, because of electronic surveillance of every human transaction that takes place, if not globally, I always think to myself, I'm sort of tailoring unconsciously my message to those drones and serfs and I guess you can call them the badged and unbadged thuggery who inhabit those government cubicles, monitoring the airwaves and monitoring everything that we're saying. And I'm hoping that you and I can plant a seed.
Oh yeah, that's why
in their head.
That's why they're trying to do it more with software because they're afraid we'll convert them. You know, that's another Boston Tea Party thing. Was he said that he thinks that about 20 years ago the Pentagon decided that they didn't want a bunch of you know, guys joining the military, you know, people doing the service to their country and then going home to sell shoes or insurance and being able to you know, hit a dinner plate size area on a mammal at 900 yards. So at some point they decided we need to make smart weapons so we can turn the soldier off when he goes back to his job.
You know, frankly, I don't, and I love Boston. He and I are brethren, but I don't think the pentagram is smart enough to extrapolate those second and third order effects. I just don't think they do it.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, they probably got people who could do that, but they're probably at such a low level that they're not listened to. You know, it's not. I have a friend who worked for the government. I won't say what part, but you know, something similar to that. And you know, I was like, well, he was like, I had an idea to streamline things. And this is back when I was a Square Status. And I was like, well, why didn't you talk to your boss about it or your boss's boss? And he laughed and said, to talk to my boss's boss, I would need to put a request in writing 2 months in advance. And there would have to be three other people in the room and it would be really weird. And they'd be looking at me like, why are you doing this, man?
And that's what happens in a stratified, hierarchical 15th century organization, which is what the state is.
Speaking of hierarchical, archaic things, I want to point out, for the sake of Fiend Phone, the software that we're developing, Derek Slope and I, that we've been using in beta on the Freedom Fiends, from fiendphone.com, that's Foxtrot Echo Echo November Phone. .com, fiendphone.com. You are not using Fiendphone. You are using Skype. So that's why it doesn't sound quite as good. But you know, I'm brilliant and I can get great sound out of anybody, even over Skype. So there.
Well, you're just that person. And no, I don't have Fiendphone, but as you know, I don't even have a smartphone.
Yeah,
I don't either. Have a dumb
phone. I have a dumb phone too, but I just bought one of those. I bought on eBay, I bought a used Android Samsung Galaxy something for $45 new. It's a discontinued model, but it's it can be used as a phone, but I'm not using it as one. I'm using it as a, I'm basically using it to as an MP3 player and to be able to check what my websites look like on a mobile, you know, to see if they're compatible and make tweaks to them.
I have to say, though, you are very technically savvy compared to me. I mean, you are a cyber ninja, and I am just I'm a technological Neanderthal. It's one reason why I use Apple, for instance, is because I don't do the hipster thing, but I use it because it's so intuitive compared to PCs, because PCs simply don't work for me. And I don't have a smartphone for two reasons. Number one, I like a dumb phone for surveillance reasons. Number two, it gives me a pause from screens.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
Because all our waking hours, we're surrounded by them. And how many times do you, Michael, see folks looking, you know, standing around
people
or walking around?
People don't look at each other anymore.
They don't. Did you know that when you have your neck cricked forward at approximately, I guess, 15 degrees, whatever it is, you're putting 300% more pressure on your C spine than you would if you were standing erect.
Yeah, and you've actually given me some good ergonomic advice, and my back problems have lessened. They haven't gone away, but you know, other than don't be sedentary all the time, and I've been walking on the treadmill a little bit, not a lot because I get busy. Yeah. But the main thing you told me was to get one of those balls, you know, those 30-inch can take 10,000 pounds of weight or, you know, 1,000 pounds of weight balls, and use it as a seat. I got that, and I didn't like using it as a seat. But I'm using it for exercise now. It's in my little room. Like, it's the biggest thing in my room. It's like, whoa, what's this alien pod in this room? But I lie on it on my back and roll around on it like people at the old folks home doing gentle.
I do exactly the same thing. I go to the gym every morning. The wife goes with me, and she helps me with my back about two or three times a week when she can. And she's the one who turned me on to that. And, of course, in the privacy of your own home, you could do it naked. Clothing optional and see what happens.
You could involve it into to exercise with your wife, with my wife.
Exactly.
I could.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. It's cool. And you know, you're aging like a fine wine, and I'm aging like a fine cheese. And it's interesting being 50. And I never thought I'd make it. You know, I was totally one of those. Like before there was a thing called the 27 Club, before Kurt Cobain died and someone noticed that all the rock stars died at 27, you know, I was like, you know, if you'd asked me when I was 16 or 17, what's your plan with life? I would have said, be a rich and famous rock star and die by 30. That was my goal. I mean, that was like, you know, I mean, they didn't tell me that was what I should do in the, counseling in high school, but, that's what I wanted to do. And, you know, I got off heroin 2 weeks before my 30th birthday. And so, I was suddenly like not famous, totally broke and not dead. And then I had to go, I'm going to look around and see what else I can do with my life. This is strange, you know? And then it was around the time I got computers, and, I took to them like a fish to, you know, fish food.
Well, you did a D plus. You run your teaching hospital for Liberty Recording.
Yep. Among other
of which
things.
I am one of your students.
Yeah. And the thing, you know, I don't really, the whole Apple versus Mac thing, it's kind of like Democrat versus Republican. And really the reason I'm on a PC, and this is probably similar to the reason that you're on a Mac. And I thought about either asking you to buy a PC to run Fiendphone or even buying you a used one, because you can buy them for like $100. But then I was thinking, you know, it'd be good once in a while to have the show not sound as good and be able to say, we're not using Fiendphone. You're the control group. But the reason I'm on a PC, and probably the reason, you know, probably similar reason why you're on a Mac, my first computer, like I bought a, you know, DOS only computer in like 1991. It couldn't even get on the internet. I just used it as a word processor. But in 96, my sister sent me, like, she worked at Cornell and, you know, they bought her equipment and she got a new computer. So she sent me her old computer and it was a PC. You know, it was like running Windows 3.1. It had 8 or 16 megs of RAM. I remember upgrading the RAM, like buying 16 more megs of RAM for like $100. It might have been, no, it wasn't Memory Dealers. That's Roger Ver's thing. It was in the Bay Area, but it was called like Sweet Memories. And it was in, this is kind of funny. Memory was so expensive then. I mean, it was like, it cost me like $84 or no, $128 for, you know, 16 megs of RAM. People used to rob people at gunpoint, like places that sold memory. The place that I went to was in the Chevron building. Talk about military industrial complex in San Francisco on the first floor. It was an empty office with a desk, a guy behind it, a chair, a safe, and a telephone. No computer. And the rumor was that he had a pistol in the drawer, which is really hard to get a permit for in San Francisco. But the rumor was he had a permit for a pistol in San Francisco, the same way a diamond merchant could get a pistol permit in San Francisco.
Interesting, because what I do is I always carry everywhere, even when it's not permitted by my zookeepers to do so.
Zookeepers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure there's people. I had a roommate that was a cab driver in San Francisco, and he carried a snub-nosed revolver anyway, even though it was impossible for poor people to get a permit. And it made sense, man, being a cab driver.
Well, you know, it makes a lot of sense. And here's the secret sauce in America is that if you're a woman who illegally carries a gun and you are assaulted and you use that gun and you either maim or kill somebody, there is very little chance, even in this wacky police state we live in, that she will be convicted.
Yeah. Well, yeah. At least for the gun. They might get her for the murder, yeah. for the homicide. Yeah. But yeah, so the reason I'm on PCs and not Macs is because someone gave me a PC. You know, my sister gave me a PC. Now, are you on Macs because somehow you just, you know, that was the first computer the universe handed you?
No, not at all. A quick preamble. When I went to Humboldt State University in the 1980s, on Macs.
Oh, well, yeah, it just explains it. Liberals use Macs. That's all I need to know.
Well, there it is.
Yeah,
there it is. And I'm one of the only MacBook Pro users you will ever meet who hides his illuminated Apple icon when he's out in public.
Why?
Because
I
have
that?
I have a leather cover over it.
Yeah, it's people love to show that off too. And you know, computers are all good. I mean, great things have been done on Macintoshes. Most Hollywood movies are written on Macintoshes, and a few of them are good. Let's see.
I think Steve Jobs was a tremendous capitalist in the purest sense.
Yeah.
And his aesthetic sensibilities of simplicity really appealed to the inner stoic, the inner Seneca in me. So that's another reason why I like it.
Yeah, but you can pay 2/3 as much and get a PC that's just as powerful and doesn't look as sexy. That's why I like them. We'll be back on the Freedom Fiends after this trip to the free market with Bill Buppert, a retired Army officer.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
So, we're going to the break. I said something about Bill Buppert's Legionnaire's disease. I mean, Legionnaire's service. And he said something, but I didn't catch it because I was pulling the fader down. What did you say, sir?
I just said you could never stop saying that. You're almost obsessed.
Well, you know, because we talk about the military-industrial complex a lot, and I think it's actually useful. I'm not as set on saying every segment like I used to that you are a retired Army officer, but I think it has use. Not so much on the internet podcast version, but on the live radio version like we're doing now. The average listener, I mean, you can't say there's an average anything, but, you know, people who listen to talk radio tend to be kind of patriotic. They tend to be kind of pro-military. And if we are talking about things like the military and most of what they do does more harm than good to your freedom, that blows people's minds. And they just kind of write you off and assume that you're a filthy liberal. and that you're, you know, a peacenik who walks around with flowers in his hair and rolls around in nature and has, you know, leaves in his furry sweater and lives in Vermont, but and went to Bennington. And they can dismiss you, but I think that saying you're bona fides, that you are a retired Army officer, I think those people will go, okay, I'll listen for 10 seconds.
Okay, and I will tell you, I'm an armed peacenik. I'm not a pacifist, but I do believe in the ZNAP, the zero non-aggression principle.
Wait, that's a double negative. That's a double negative. The zero non-aggression. I think that's what Chris Cantwell believes in, the zero non-aggression principle.
Actually, it's Z/N. So if you want me to call it Zap or Nap, I'll do what you please. So I'm not a pacifist because I think that leads to an extinction event for the person who's a pacifist. But
yeah,
I believe I'm a porcupine. I like the way the Free State has adopted that. And believe me, I'm an irregular warfare expert. I do think that I am. I'm very...
Well, you're hired as one by the U.S. government, or you have been in the past. I mean...
Well, I am indeed. But the fact that I'm an abolitionist has severely affected my eligibility for a lot of positions.
Yeah. Do they know who it you has. Are?
I mean, well, they do because I don't hide it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't go under a nom de plume, and anybody can go to zerogov.com. If you Google my name, Bill Buppert, and you look at the essays that are attached to it, it can make not only liberals but also conservatives and all collectivists of every stripe fill their pants because of what I have to say. You know, like my latest blog posting was it was edgy even for me, I think, and it's titled "Hold Death Dear and the State Will Vanish." And what I'm basically saying after doing the Stoicism series with Brett at School Sucks Podcast, if I can say that on your program.
Yes, you can, because you're referring to something else.
Great.
Yeah.
So that being the case, what I say here in Hold Death Dear and the State Will Vanish, bottom line is this. If you refuse to submit yourself and you're willing to die in service of your beliefs, and you get a critical mass of people who do that, the government can't do anything because fear is their mortar and obedience is their brick.
Yeah.
And if they don't have those two things, then they cannot function for an hour, much less a day or for eternity.
Yep. And before we get into hardcore Bill philosophy, which we're going to do for the next hour and a half or more, there's a couple announcements I had to make. One is, and this kind of goes back to what we were talking about with computers. Yesterday on the show with Ben Stone, I went on a rant for the first hour about people, about two things. One was about not getting enough donations for this software that's world-changing that we came up with. And, you know, really, Fiendphone. And really, the thing is, like, it's been out for 5 days, and the market will provide. And it has a bit. And the other thing was complaining about people who write me and demand that we make a Linux or Mac version today. And you saw my response to the Linux guy who said, oh, freedom never exists on Windows. It only exists on Linux. My answer to him was something to the effect of, and I'm paraphrasing what he said, but I can't remember it. But my answer to him was, yeah, and real Linux people would just program their own version of it and share it with everybody, which is true.
You know, I'm not an Apple fanboy. I use Apple for the same reason I use a Glock. It works for me.
Yeah.
It works
and,
for me.
And I use, I wouldn't say Windows are like the high point. I'd say they're more like the Smith & Wesson. They're cheaper and they work, you know, pretty well. And I can afford them. But the other thing is, I want to make it clear, like, I wasn't bashing people that, you know, don't donate. I was bashing people that don't donate and tell me there's something wrong with how I'm doing, you know, giving a project away to the world that we're working on for free, basically. You know, there are people who say I do it wrong, and there are people who've done nothing. That's what I was complaining about. You know, not that we haven't gotten enough donations. All right. We'll be back. Afterwards, you'll probably hear an ad for Fiendphone right here. All right. Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges. Yeah! This is Davi Barker from shinybadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at shinybadges.com, write worms in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Freedom Fiends. I'm talking to Guillaume Boupert, and I am Michel Dean. And we are cheese-eating surrender monkeys. And we're going to talk about Je suis Charlie. And I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Oh, stop that about the surrender monkeys with French.
The French have been...
Stop.
That's why...
You know, all you're doing is you're...
I'm making a joke. I am quoting
But you're serving the...
No.
You're serving the neoconservative preconceptions.
Come on, man. I'm quoting some neoconservative so we can make fun of it. Who was it who said...
Let's do
it. Who was it who said something about the French? Well, it was a lot of people, but...
Well, the neocons, of course. Because the French refuse to be a part of NATO, because the French refuse to not go their own way, because they were the ones, you know, for good or ill, who said, we are going to go the French national way, and we'll do it as we please. So, I admire that.
So, you know, as far as debunking the cheese-eating surrender monkeys line, talk about La Résistance in World War II.
Well, there were two resistance organizations. There was the French Resistance and there were the Maquis. They were both communist organizations. And both of these organizations could survive the Nazi onslaught for nearly 5 years of occupation because of the cellular structure that they had built during two decades of being hounded by the French authorities in pre-Vichy France. So as a result of being commies and as a result of having Yugoslavian, Russian, and of course, awful office support from the US because that was Moscow East during the war to save Joseph Stalin, they could withstand the National Socialist assault because for the first 3 years, the OSS and the SOE, that would be the Office of Strategic Services and the Special Operations Executive, the US and British CIA, GCHQ general equivalents before they were formed after the conclusion of World War II, before they could airdrop JetBerg teams in, support teams, materiel, logistic stuff.
Let me ask this. Is there any American soldier that starves while performing his duties now?
There is not.
Yeah.
There is not.
And would that be true of every industrialized nation?
I think so, yes.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, during World War II, I mean, you had American, British, and French, and German, and Russian soldiers out in the field, you know, for months at a time, like trying to conserve their last 10 rounds of ammo, you know, and like hunting birds with a coat, you know, like using it as a snare because they're starving to death.
Well, that didn't happen very often with the Western industrialized nations' armies at all.
Is Halliburton the roadies for
they were
have they replaced the are they like
I don't
the,
think they were provisioning at the time
are they
you know one thing I do want to make sure though that we are laughing it up but I take very seriously the dozen lives to include the three cops apparently who lost their lives as a result of what happened
in
more
France.
So we're talking
don't bury the lead. I buried the lead. So we're talking about the what's the name of the magazine? Something Charlie.
I can't remember it. People will find it. It's all over the net. Why? Let's not do it a disservice and bad
try to pronounce it.
Yeah.
And my cat's name is Charlie, so I've been saying "Je suis Charlie" lately, which is the "We are all Charlie, we're with you" people in solidarity. I've been saying that to my cat, but I don't want to undermine this thing and like make light of it really. Cause you know, basically a bunch of people just got shot while going about their business in a place of business. And, let me ask you this first. Do you think there's a possibility it was a false flag?
I do. I always think that.
I figured.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think so too, man.
Yeah. Do I have the evidence for it? Of course I don't. Do I have the evidence for the bona fides of the citizenship of the resident of the awful office? No, I don't. Do I think 911 was an inside job? I mean, it's speculative. I don't have any evidence to that regard. So like I've said before on your program, I rarely dip my toes into the conspiratorial fever swamp, but I do have friends who take lap swims.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have enough time, Michael, trying to apprehend the real world around me instead of trying to open doors that I'll never unlock in my lifetime.
Apprehend and comprehend.
Yes,
you have to comprehend it, then you apprehend it. You wrap your loving arms around the truth and try to reflect on it.
Yeah. You're right.
So
I just think that
Charlie, it's
a tragedy what happened to the prostitutes there. And I refer to journalists as prostitutes because I think that 90% plus of them serve the state. Unlike, I would consider you a journalist of sorts. You and Dobby are journalists.
About once a month I'm a journalist. Yeah. The other nights I'm basically kind of a smart version of Beavis and Butthead.
Well, I dig the fact that you guys take journalism seriously in this respect. You realize that you are not supposed to be a mouthpiece for the state, nor a prostitute for the state, nor participate in Goebbels gargling. Your primary job is to show the state for the naked emperor that it is in everything that it does.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
So I don't want to make light of, even though I suspect these French journalists were filators of the state, I don't want to make light of their deaths. Because what happened was wrong, wrong, wrong for them to lose their lives over the cartoons, the covers, the making fun of Muhammad and all the rest of it. I get it that there's people there with religious sensitivities. And I don't even look at the First Amendment in France because it doesn't exist there. I don't even look at press freedoms and think that, well, those press freedoms are codified, because it doesn't matter if they're codified. Like self-defense, you and I have the right, as long as we aren't harming others, and that doesn't include offending people or hurting their feelings, but you and I have the right to express ourselves.
Although the ironic thing is, one of the reactions to this shooting is that universities in, I believe it's England, are suddenly going to ban any speakers from coming into the university who they deem to be extremist in any way, holding any view that is outside of the, you know, the Sigma One, the center of political and religious belief. So basically, a bunch of people got killed. If it's not a false flag, a bunch of innocent people got killed, more or less innocent people. They are leftists and statists, but that's not a reason to kill somebody. So
a bunch of
innocent people got killed because the people who killed them, this is the official story, hated free speech. So the result is England is going to limit free speech more.
Well, I mean, of course, but look, you know, I think it's both in France and Canada. You can't question the Holocaust because that is a punishable offense with jail time.
Yeah.
David Irving is serving time in Austria because he questions the official story of the Holocaust. Now, I don't have a dog in that fight, but I really think that if you start giving jail time or cage time to people because they have a different historical interpretation than you do, that is wrong-headed, whether I agree with them or not.
And it's a slippery slope. And I, for the record, I believe the Holocaust happened, and pretty much to the extent that we're told it happened. Although, it is downplayed that it was anything but Jewish people. Hitler didn't like a lot of different kinds of people. There were
Slavs, there
Jews,
were gays.
Slavs, gays, intellectuals, dissidents.
The retarded,
the physically infirm.
Homosexuals.
Yeah. A couple of other religious groups too. What are the Watchtower people?
I don't think it was Muslims, because there were SS Muslim legions
fielded. It was the people that come to your door with the Watchtower. Jehovah's Witnesses.
Oh, Jehovah's Witnesses. Okay.
Yeah, he
killed. I don't think there were any Jehovah's Witnesses legions.
He also killed a few professors for speaking and promoting the language of Esperanto. because it was anti, you know, he considered it anti-German and one worldly unifying in a way that was not in his control. Now, Esperanto, if you don't know, is a made up language. All languages are made up, but this one was made up a lot more quickly and, like, you know, planned, like on the spot. Some people got together and said, let's make up a language that will take one from column A, one from column B, and, like, everyone in the world can learn it really easily, and it has words from different languages, and it has, you know, very limited and strict rules that don't have variations on how to conjugate things. And it's a really stupid language. It never caught on very much, and that is the market speaking. Like, if, you know, somebody – maybe someone could find a different language. I don't know. I kind of think that the lingua for the biggest second language in the world is English. Most people can understand some English. It's like the fourth most common first language.
Yeah.
But, you know, basically if you can translate something into English, Spanish, Mandarin, and Arabic, that covers about 97% of the world.
It does. You know what surprises me about National Socialism is that I've often encountered my collectivists and left of center friends and said, apart from the liquidation of unimportant or people that you don't like, what is it with the National Socialist platform you disagree with? Because you espouse 90% of it.
Yeah, and I've even seen a lot of liberals lately that want to have not wholesale liquidation, but, you know, certain amount of killing of people. Like, I've seen well-known comedians and actors, like, go on record on YouTube and say, you know, after, like, this shooting disaster or that shooting disaster of school children, I've literally heard them say, like, I think everybody in the NRA, you know, they should go door to door with the NRA, like, demand take the NRA's mailing list, go door to door, demand the guns, and anybody who won't give up their guns, I think, should be killed. I've heard famous people who are liberals say that.
And we hear Bill Ayers talking, you know, the commie advisor to Obama, saying that 25% of the population should be liquidated.
And who calls himself a libertarian, which I think is just to undermine it.
Well, so does Noam Chomsky. And Noam Chomsky is a philator of the state of the highest water.
Yeah, and so does who's the pundit, the one that cries a lot, the right winger guy,
Glenn Beck.
Glenn Beck.
He calls
himself a libertarian.
I don't get it at all.
No,
yeah, none of them are. Not and of course, Stefan's not anymore, is he?
Stefan Molyneux. Oh, I thought we weren't going to go there. Yeah, Jeff Berwick recently threw him under the bus. I told Jeff Berwick 6 months ago, like, when we're exchanging, you know, we exchange about 100 or 200 emails on a project we're working on, which I'll talk about at some point. But
you're going to talk about that with Davi this sometime, aren't you?
I did last week. But you know, here's the thing. Like, you're a gentleman. You don't want to go on record with any of this stuff. And I did try to convince Jeff Berwick that Molyneux was a bad guy. And Berwick, one-on-one to me, like, defended him and said, no, he's a good guy. I have nothing bad to say about him. It was right before that interview I did with him. I'm like, do you want to talk about him? And he's like, nah, man, I think he's a good guy. And he just last week did a scathing, you know, like, I can no longer co-sign this guy or recommend him to anybody. But you don't get into those beefs, and I respect you for that. A few other fiends do. Here's the interesting thing about the fiends, though. Unlike a lot of groups, I am really good friends with people who are really good friends with people I don't like. Like, Derek J is really good friends with Chris Cantwell. You're really good friends with Mark Stevens. And there are people who would, like, fire, like, petty people who would be like, oh, I'm going to un-Facebook you, and you can't be my friend, and I won't be on the show with you. And I'm like, bring it on, man. The more the merrier. It's all good. I'm not the libertarian decider.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Hey, this is Squizcar Squigelts from Death Clocks, and you are listening to The Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing. Buttons! Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Talking to Bill Buebert from ZeroGov.com. Are you still well? Are you still safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
You know what? All of us have been contacted by the government in a direct or indirect manner 24/7. That's what the government does because they monitor everything we do.
I think we should call this episode "Obeying the Law is Overrated." What do you think of that?
I like it a lot.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think obedience is overrated.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. To explain that very simple thing, and I think this is one of the greatest contributions to liberty of Bill's, of everything he's done, which is a lot. I think this will be what's on your tombstone. Will be, here lies Bill Buebert, the guy who said, and what's your thing about question authority and obedience?
Question authority is sexy, but question obedience is where the rubber hits the road.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is our obedience. And I just wrote a blog posting to this effect where I discuss that very thing concerning obedience, because it's questioning authority is really easy to do because you got no skin in the game. Oh, our congressmen, they're such doofuses. Oh, the president, he doesn't know what he's doing. Oh, those guys, if I was in charge, things would be so much better. Well, the only reason they're in charge, I can't say it on the radio, blank, is because not only did you vote for them, but you obey every law, edict, and diktat that comes down the road. And by the way, you obey it to such a degree, you do it as an individual, and you'll be a government snitch if your neighbor doesn't do it.
Yeah.
That's why we're where we are.
And we're going to segue into talking about the 60s for probably the rest of the show, because Bill and I grew up in it. We were little kids. Little tiny kids. I was born in 64. What year were you born in, if 60. You want to say? 60? 60. All right. So I was aware of the hippies and the yippies and the radicals, but, you know, my parents told me the radicals were bad. But, you know, my sister actually came back from college. She went to, what's the one in New Hampshire that Stephanie Murphy went to? You know, that
I'm
college.
Not certain.
It's one of the Ivy Leaguer ones. I'll think of the name of it. But she came back and she had a button that said SDS. And I really looked up to my sister. You know, she was like my older, cool sister.
Which is Students for a Democratic Society.
Yeah.
A Marxist organization.
Yeah. And I was like, what is this? And she's like, oh, I'm not really into that. Someone just gave me that. And I was, and then I, you know, got a copy of Steal This Book by Abbie Hoffman when I was 12.
Like the Shea shirts.
Yeah, but Steal This Book by Abbie Hoffman is worth reading. It's it's a very flawed, it's a very morally flawed guidebook to taking over America. But those people were funny, man. Like the yippies, one of the Detroit yippies in 1970 went to City Hall. I talked to them about this the other night and applied for a permit to blow up the General Motors building. I'm not advocating violence. I'm just saying this is like, they don't make activists like they used to. This is pretty funny.
It's, And it's funny too with Abbie Hoffman publishing a book that says "Steal this book," where here you have at last a lefty, a collectivist, a Marxist who is honest about the modus operandi he will use to organize society, which is theft and death.
Yeah, and one of the reasons that book didn't spread more widely was because stores who wanted to carry it wouldn't carry it after a while. They'd get one order of them and everyone would steal it. That's true.
I happen to think that I'm a fan of the Beat Generation with Ginsberg and Kerouac and that stream of consciousness literary revolution that I think that they authored at the time in the 50s, that tortured illusion was standing. Yeah. And there was a, as much as I hate the left and right paradigm, there was a collectivist and individualist fork in the road, and they took the collectivist fork for the most part. Yeah. They could have taken that individualist, anarchist, abolitionist, libertarian fork, and
you know what
different would the planet be now?
It was people saying, well, we can't fight the system. We need to work within the system. And that came pretty much right after the yippies and you know, tried to work against the system and blow things up. And the civil rights movement trying to get the voting rights and, you know, people getting killed, signing up black voters and getting them to vote. And then they finally got the numbers and then went to the delegation and the Democrats locked them out. They said, you know, we don't want your kind of Democrats. And then the Democratic Party like immediately reinvented itself as the behemoth that it is today. I mean, it was a behemoth then too. It was a racist behemoth, but so Detroit yippies went to City Hall and applied for a permit to blow up the General Motors building in 1970. After the permit was denied, the yippies said, "This just goes to show you can't work within the system to change the system. This destroys my last hope for legal channels," said Detroit yippie Jumpin' Jack Flash. So those guys had a sense of humor about everything, I would say. We'll be back with hour two of the Freedom Fiends with Bill Beaverick from ZeroGov.com after this trip to the market and then some national news. It'll probably scare the heck out of you and make you want to vote. And then you come back and we'll calmly get it out of you. Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've been working with computer programmer Derek Slopey to create Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free, open-source software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try the Windows beta version of Fiend Phone right now at fiendphone.com. But we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiend Phone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com and join the conversation, because if you don't, you'll set liberty back 2,500 years.
That's fiendphone.com, FENPHONE.com. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiendphone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Broadcasting from the Libertarian Reindoctrination Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza, on the planet Libair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Bill Buford and I are well rested and ready for further abuse. After our break, we're back. Are you well rested and ready for further abuse? I am, Bill.
I am ready for it here in Alpha Rothbardis, which happens to be the star system that I inhabit. So, and we're back for the second hour. So for those who just joined, thank you for joining the Michael Dean Show, where we philosophically terraform the planet one disobedient surf at a time. Bill Buebert, ZeroGov.com. Michael, take it away.
Don't libertarians all get their own planet after we die?
Libertarians and Mormons do, yes.
Yeah, yep. Mine's when he called Libpair 2017 and... I don't know. That means I might die in 2017. I don't want to say that. All right. So we're talking about the 60s. We did a show before, Bill and I, on where the hippies went wrong. But let's do another one, because we could talk about 10 episodes on this. Because this could be a 10-part series. So
we can. You know, my wife kids me about the dumb phone that I have, because she says, that cover you've got on the phone is what a 13-year-old girl would wear on her phone. And I respond to it by saying, it's got peace symbols on it. It's pink, it's black, it's yellow, and it's very wavy and Beatlesque. But what it is...
Hey, can you hear this helicopter over my house? Listen, I'll hold the mic up to that. Hear that?
That's awesome. Now, the only time you have to worry, Michael, is if you hear ropes hit your roof. Just so you know.
Yeah, that was flying pretty low, man. I didn't see it. I had my curtains down because, you know, it's harder to target the drones than... No, I'm kidding. They could do.
But my phone cover is an homage to not only peace, but to
you're
Ken Kesey's LSD experience.
You're burying the lead. What's your phone cover? We can't see it from here.
You can't see it from here, and you're not going to see it because I'm not going to reveal it. It's a dumb phone. It's got a cover, and it's got a... It looks like Ken Kesey's bus with peace signs painted all over it. Something like a hippie bus that you'd see from the 1960s. That's what my phone cover looks like.
Ken Kesey hit on my sister.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
That's amazing.
The same one that had the SDS button. Yeah, she... my siblings are a lot older than me. My dad's 93. My sister... I'm the youngest kid. I'm 50. The next youngest kid is 11 years older than me. The next sister is 4 years older than her. My brother is like 75 or 76 now. So, yeah.
Good
man.
God, man. Your parents were fecund.
What's fecund mean?
Fertile. They were randy beyond their years. How's
well,
that?
Yeah. Four kids isn't that stellar. I mean, that's like, you know, 22-year-olds in Wyoming. But, seriously, man, this is the land of many children families, and not just Mormons. There are a lot of Mormons here. This state borders Utah, and there's a lot of Mormons here. There's a Mormon temple, like, you know, right down the street from our house. We pass it every day. There's always deer in the because they have such a well maintained yard. There's always deer hanging out in there, and I guess they don't shoo them away. I like that. I like seeing deer.
I do too.
Yep.
You know, you were saying in the previous episode about the Democrats are Republicans and that the Democrats are racist. There's no doubt about that. I am no fan of the grand old Politburo, and I think that they are just as much of a collectivist behemoth as the Democrats are. But there's this notion today that Democrats have always been kind to black folks, and they've always held them in the highest regard and wanted to make sure that they were well taken care of across the fetid plain. Well, that's not the case, and I would urge your audience to look up their history and take a look at who was in the KKK, who had KKK senators,
Democrats.
Who was behind the Jim Crow laws,
Democrats.
Who was behind the first gun control measures?
Democrats. I would also point out that, you know, one of these rubrics, is that the right term for something that's not true?
No, it wouldn't be.
Okay.
Because a rubric would be like a brick in the wall of an argument you're trying to put together.
Okay. One of the big piles of deer droppings that statists love to do is that, you know, without the government, there would be racism everywhere.
Oh, my gosh.
No, there's racism everywhere because of the government. And one example is, you know, the KKK were like the sheriffs, man. And, you know, the governor of Mississippi was keeping blacks from integrating colleges. He sent the National Guard to keep them out after the government said they can come in. I mean, this was the government oppressing black people and locking them out. You know, there's a documentary that came out recently. I saw it on PBS at Porkfest in the hotel when I was trying to fall asleep at 5 a.m. because, you know, I can out-party. I don't do drugs or drink, and I can out-party all of the people who do. So I'm still up in the hotel room at 5 a.m. And I was watching this PBS thing. There's a new documentary out that's actually got tapes that were recovered under the FOIA Act from LBJ talking to his advisors. These are tapes that the FBI made of the president, and they've been released. And basically, like, you know, you hear the president of the United States, like, talking about, you know, basically saying, like, we're not going to let them N-words get any power, you know?
You're right. In 1967, it was Ronald Reagan, because of the Black Panthers going on the steps of the Capitol in Sacramento. He was a governor at the time, who said, people shouldn't be allowed to carry weapons in public. And he didn't like the fact that these black folk were carrying weapons, to include rifles and pistols, not only at the Capitol, but just at large. And you were talking about presidents. Remember, it was Joe Biden in a 2006 interview where he said, I mean, you've got the first sort of mainstream African-American who is articulate and bright and clean and a nice looking guy. He's describing Obama. Harry Reid describing him as a light-skinned African-American with no Negro dialect. Democrats can say that.
Well, it's kind of like what Colonel Tom Parker said about Elvis. He said, you know, if I could find a white boy that could sing like a black boy, I could be a millionaire. And he found Elvis. I mean, in a way, Obama is kind of the Elvis. He's kind of the light-skinned white. He's the white guy that can look that. He's the black guy that can politic like a white guy, basically.
I don't know if I would go that far, because then what I'm doing is I'm slipping into the stereotypes
I know
that the government wants me to think. I think that he's an articulate Marxist. I think George Bush was an articulate Marxist. As a matter of fact, I have to go back to Thomas Jefferson to find a resident of the Oval Office who didn't have this collectivist whim in them that made them want to put their thumb on everybody, black or white.
But he owned slaves, so it's hard for me to look at him as a paragon of liberty. And, you know, a lot of people say, like, well, it was the style of the day. And it's like,
he was a creature of his time.
If it were the style of the day now, I would not own slaves.
Well, then look at you and I now, though. I mean, we're abolitionists, and we're definitely out of the mainstream, out of step, and not in the least part engaging in what people would call either conventional wisdom or doing what everybody else does.
Woo! Yep. It's true, man. It's true. So where else did the hippies go wrong?
I think where they basically went wrong is taking the collectivist track. But there were some hippies who still had a germ of individualism. And we talked about this on another show, but it bears repeating. Stuart Brand, who was the author and the force behind the Whole Earth Catalog and now what's called the Long Now Foundation, and everything that he's done in between, he just did some incredible things as far as individualism, self-sufficiency, self-reliance, taking this entire prepper movement that we have today, the survivalist movement, I would go so far as to say, people who think that self-reliance is not only important, but maybe a lifestyle. He was doing what people are doing today. He was talking about this in the 1960s. And he was sort of a bridge, I think, between that kind of frontier self-reliance that you had with Americans who were fleeing the Constitution, heading west, because that's why they did what they did, and what we have today. I think he was almost a bridge in the 20th century for that mindset.
I concur. So, Abbie Hoffman, were you aware of his work at the time when you were a little kid?
I was not. And you know what? I think, again, he was a guy who loved attention.
He was a prankster. He was the Chris Cantwell of the hippies.
that's so funny that they called them yippies too. Hippies.
Yeah,
they were all collectivists though.
You know,
because they all had this Pollyanna-ish notion that if the government were big enough, we'd all be better off.
Yeah, if I were an adult back then, I would have been a freak, not a hippie or a yippie. Do you know? You know the difference?
I do.
Explain the difference.
Well, a freak was somebody who didn't abide by anybody's lifestyle except what they wanted to do, and they did it to excess.
They often owned guns, too.
Like the Panthers, 1967. Yeah. You know, it would be interesting. Would it be interesting for somebody to write a history of gun-toting hippies? No one's done that yet.
Huh. Yeah. That is interesting. I mean, Thomas Jefferson would probably be one of them, the first.
You know, I wonder if in Radicals for Capitalism, that book that was penned by, was it Brian Doherty?
From Reason?
I think so.
Sounds right.
Right. I've got the book on my shelf. Haven't read it yet. I'll bet he touched on that. Because if you think about it, to a certain extent, hippies with guns fit the libertarian mold. I have a lot of hippie-ish and crunchy tendencies myself. You've met me. I look rather conventional. But I'm a crunchy eater. I do whatever the USDA and the FDA tells me to do as far as eating is concerned. I do the direct opposite, and that's why I'm as healthy as I am today.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything the government tells me to do, if I do the opposite, I will be healthier in mind, spirit, and body. If your audience takes anything away from this 2 hours of bloviation they're going to hear on your brilliant show, I think they can take that to the bank.
Yeah. The state.
The state. But the state, like they say, the state are us. Because ain't the state me. Couldn't exist if the tax cattle didn't comply.
Brian Doherty did write Radicals for Capitalism. And I like Reason Magazine. I like the fact that Reason Magazine exists, but I'm not a fan of it.
They're establishment libertarians.
They really
and they
are.
Have a militarist wing.
They are. Well, let's expand on that. But Nima Vedati calls them beltway libertarians, and I think that's
exactly
pretty accurate.
Like the Cato Institute.
Yeah. What do you mean the military? They have an army?
Well, no, they don't have. But they tend to say.
I don't think they carry guns. I don't think any of those cats carry guns.
I don't know. Number one, they're minarchists. They're not abolitionists like you and I, if I may be presumptuous. And because of that, they'll say, well, the pentagram should be reduced, but they shouldn't be eliminated. And the CIA, maybe they should change their functions a little bit and make them be better governors for the people and use their money better. But we shouldn't, you know, raise the ground that the pentagram and Langley's on and so on.
Yeah. We'll be back with more to tell you about why we're right and you're wrong about everything you believe. Right, Bill?
Indeed.
Not you're wrong. You and I are right, Bill. Everyone else is wrong.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Money.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
Freedom Fiends. Talking to Bill Buepert. And at the end of this segment, I'm going to reveal why I think I know who wrote the racist Ron Paul newsletters. But you wanted to talk about objectivists who have problems. What are they?
You know, I'm probably one of the few libertarians you know who did not use Rand as an entry drug.
Yeah, I tried reading that book and threw it against the wall. And it wasn't because, you know, I read about 50 pages of it and I didn't find anything in the first 50 pages to disagree with. Although I have things I disagree with Ayn Rand for sure. But I just found that book so dense. And there's a problem I have with writers who write in a way that you can tell they're smirking and saying, I'm so brilliant while they're writing it. And she's one of them.
Indeed. Yes. Well, it's the cult, and we've discussed this on other programs. It's a cult of personality. It's the fact that she doesn't want to brook discontent. Because the first thing I need to know about somebody, if they're running a cult, if that's what they're doing, is that if they allow no discontent, if they allow no dissent, if they don't allow themselves to be questioned on large or small issues that they entertain or bloviate on, they're people I want to stay away from. And what I've discovered is that Leonard Peikoff, who sort of took over the reins from Rand when she assumed room temperature to speak for official received objectivism, this guy was a rabid militarist who was saying these really awful things after 9/11 about we need to take the war to the Muslims, we need to go to the Middle East, we need to. I'd rather stipulate direct quotations, but what he basically wanted to do was wage war on people because of the blowback that the U.S. experienced in 2001 and 9/11 after meddling in the Middle East since 1920 or maybe even before.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's Newton's third law, which is ironclad. For every action, you are going to get a reaction. And America doesn't understand that. Unfortunately, the French, as we discussed in the earlier segment, they are sowing what they reaped in that case because of what they did in Algeria and the war that they have made on Muslims, and the fact that I think they have the largest Muslim population in Europe at 21%. Maybe one of your audience members can Google that or star page it and discover a more accurate figure. But that's the last one I was aware of. But, you know, war is the health of the state. If you cheer war on, what you're doing is you're cheering on your shackles. You're really saying that manacles are just wonderful, and I want more of it.
Man, I feel like after that, telling who I'm pretty sure might be the guy who wrote the racist Ron Paul newsletters is like anticlimactic.
Why don't you do it? Do it. Who wrote it?
Okay, I don't know this for a fact. This is my theory. And this is kind of interesting because I generally, when I criticize people, it's generally people either in our realm. And if you notice, I don't punch down. There are people less popular than me, less well-known than me, that I don't even touch. Because this is something MK Lords taught me. She said, don't punch down. And so I end up only doing it with people that are more well-known than me. And people say, oh, you're just trying to do it to get, you know, right on their coattails and get attention. No, it's because I think there are things worth criticizing about people in the liberty movement, but I don't want to kick down. I don't want to find, you know, some kid that's got a blog that has, you know, 20 followers. I don't want to kick him down because also it's not that important because it's, you know, that's not the person who is the face of liberty to other people. Like Molyneux, you know, again and again and again is getting quoted in the mainstream press and people, and they're using it to say, look how crazy libertarians are. You know, the kid with the blog with 20 followers who lives with his parents, that guy is not dangerous to liberty because he's not the face of it, you know? So I go after these other people, but, I'm actually going to go kind of out of our ANCAP realm here. There's a guy named Eric Dondero who does a blog called Libertarian Republican, and he's anything but. He's, you know, basically hates Muslims, likes, you know, some military, you know, votes, works within the system. Basically, he's a neocon who wants pot legal. and he has this blog called Libertarian Republican. It's pretty popular in the kind of, you know, let's work within the system, Republican Liberty Caucus kind of people. I think he's a good candidate, let's say, for having written the racist Ron Paul newsletters. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to give my evidence for that. And it's not proof. There's a difference between proof and evidence. And this is just evidence. I'm not saying he wrote them. But I think there's a possibility that he should be on the short list of people that may have written those things. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, man.
This is suspense for me. I don't know what it is. And I'm also glad that I'm in the opposite realm here where you got to kick down at me because I'm not a popular blog.
Yes, you are. So quit being modest.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Yeah.
Fiends with Sir Michael Dean, broadcasting from a bunker with helicopters in low orbit overhead. Talking to Bill Biebert. And so I teased this big reveal before the break that I think the racist Ron Paul newsletters may have been written by a guy named Eric Dondero. And he's kind of outside of our little ANCAP pond here, but really, like, he's big in libertarian Republicans, which is actually a thing. When it was kind of my transition, you know, I was into Ron Paul, and I was the Wyoming delegate for the Republican Liberty Caucus.
What year?
I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay.
And I met this guy, Eric Dondero, hung out with him. And he runs a website called libertarianrepublican.net. I am looking at this blog right now. The top picture, or no, his about libertarian Republican. So this is his about page, like defining what he is. The first thing, it's got a picture of a sassy girl who looks like a pinup girl from the, you know, from like something some greaser would have a tattoo of. Like a Betty Pagey kind of looking girl next to a U.S. military plane. You know, like posing like sex and military. That's cool. And the poll quote, the big quote he's got here is, there are two forces of evil in the world, big government and big Islam. You cannot call yourself a true libertarian if you only understand half the equation. Eric Dondero, senior aide, U.S. Congressman Ron Paul, 1997 to 2003.
And these are 1.6 billion religious adherence.
Yeah.
And if it would turn around where the Muslims said, you know, Christians are the problem and they are the it's just foolish on its face and intellectually bankrupt to take a whole class of people. I mean, look at, there's a reason there's Protestants, and there's a reason why there's tens of thousands of Protestant sects in Christianity, for the same reason that there are so many Protestant sects, if one may use that word, within Islam. Islam is not a monolithic religion. There's Shia, there's Sunni, and there's hundreds, if not thousands, of different sects apart from that.
Yeah. And so, like, that's this guy's defining thing. You know, if you look at his about page, is a sexy woman next to a U.S. bomber plane. Like, basically, you know, yeah, bombing people is sexy, is what that says to me. And then he's got this pull quote, quoting himself, of having been a senior aide to U.S. Congressman Ron Paul, 97 to 2003, and basically saying, like, we have to stamp out Islam. That's what this quote says. And that's his defining quote of this guy who calls himself a libertarian Republican. And, okay, the Ron Paul racist newsletters, if anyone's been living in a cave with Osama bin Laden and Salinger and doesn't know about these newsletters, in 1992... Ron Paul's newsletter, and we're talking pre-internet, you know, something that's printed out on a mimeograph machine and mailed out to people who pay money to subscribe to it. There was an article that was not attributed to anybody that was extremely racist. I've read it. You can find it online. And this has been haunting Ron Paul forever, and it's probably the reason he's not president. Although, when pressed on it, he would not say who wrote it. He knows he wrote it, and he wouldn't say. And I've heard a lot of theories, everybody from Lou Rockwell to who else has been accused of having written this? Do you know?
I'm not certain. I think Murray Rothbard had been accused at one point of doing something as foolish as that. And that wouldn't have happened because there was the Rockwell-Rothbard report.
Yep. So, but Eric Dondero was working for Ron Paul before, you know, he was a senatorial aide to him from 97 to 2003, but he was working for him when these newsletters were written. And at some point around 2003, they had a parting of ways. And that was about the time the questions about the newsletter were reaching a loud, not as loud as they were later, but next time he ran for president. But so Eric Dondero was basically fired by Ron Paul, and neither of them will say why. I guess they're being gentlemen. They won't say what happened. But, you know, Ron Paul doesn't fire a lot of people. And he fired this guy who worked with him for, you know, over a decade. And Dondero was working for him back then. Now, here's my reasoning that this guy may have written him. On the surface, Eric Dondero, you know, he's anti-Muslim, but he portrays himself as not racist. But I have had email exchanges with him when he was drunk where he was extremely racist. Okay. I sent him the trailer to Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom with Nima Vidati. It was a rap song, you know, a ANCAP rap song. We Will Not Disarm, while we were working on the movie back in, I don't know, was this 5 years ago now? 4.5, 5 years ago?
Yeah.
I sent
it
to Eric Dondero. Now, Eric Dondero, we first met because he heard my band, Right Arm of Wyoming, which was like, you know, kind of hard rock, punky, small government stuff back when I was a small government guy. And he loved it. And he wrote me and said, I'm blasting this in my pickup truck every day. Thanks for making it. And we started chatting. And I was working with the RLC then. He was working with the RLC. But as I became less and less of a government man, probably from Nima Vidati's influence, and became a straight-up abolitionist, we started making this movie, Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So I sent this rap video to Eric Dondero, and he wrote back just this scathing, like, why are you making music with this Middle Eastern guy? And he said something about, like, rap music being ghetto music and not being good American music, which is kind of ironic because jazz and rap are pretty much the only two forms of music that are uniquely, absolutely American in derivation. But, you know, he was basically saying, like, why are you partnering with this Middle Eastern guy? And he was born in Texas, same as Eric Dondero. But, you know, and saying that you know, rap music is ghetto music and it's not American. So that's my. It's not proof, but it's enough evidence for me to put him on the short list of candidates because he had access motive. What is it they say, like, to convict someone of murder? You need access, motive, and opportunity. He had access, motive, and opportunity, you know, sure, to have written these. Yeah. He had the opportunity because he was working for Ron Paul at the time, like side by side in his office, like seeing him every day. And he had motive because he wrote me these scathing racist things about Nima Vidati, you know?
You know, it's interesting too, because the Grand Old Politburo, I will not defend them because I think that they're just the GOP, the Republicans. I just think they're execrable. They're another collectivist wing of this bird of prey called the U.S. government. But the Democrats really piled onto this, and it's bad what was said in the Ron Paul newsletter, but it has no comparison whatsoever, as you talked about in the last segment, of the Democrat allegiance and boosterism of the most foul and violent racism in this country since the War of Northern Aggression.
Yeah.
But there's a double standard.
Talk a little bit about the civil rights movement, since we were talking about the yippies before, you know, the mid 60s and late 60s. Talk about the early 60s and
late 50s. There's this movie out called Selma, in which it's a portrayal of Martin Luther King. And I think that when you look at the civil rights movement in this little span of time from the 40s to the 50s to the 60s, that 25-year period of time where it really started to get forward momentum. The misfortunate thing about all of that is that for the most part, all of the agitators, proponents, and boosters of equal rights for blacks and others at the time, especially in the South, just so happened to be Marxist communards and what we would call liberals. And I don't always think that they had the purest of motives when they went down there. And we see from the way Democrats, for instance, have, and I'm a non-voter speaking this way, Democrats, for instance, have taken for granted the black vote for the longest time, in that if blacks did some historical research and saw just how venal and violent and just awful the Democrats have been as a monolithic party towards black until the 1950s, I think they'd be appalled. Now, this is not to excuse the Republicans, because both parties participated in this kind of thing. I mean, we have the Mormon Church in 1978 all of a sudden getting a revelation that, hey, black folks can be priests in our church because they are human beings. Yeah. Well, you're a bit late to the party now, aren't you?
Yeah, it's kind of like didn't about 11 or 12 years ago, didn't the Pope, one of the Popes, forgive Leonardo da Vinci, or one of the great scientists of the Middle Ages, who, you know, basically said the earth wasn't flat and the sun did not revolve around the earth, and was excommunicated for it.
Indeed.
One of the Popes said, yeah, oh, by the way, we know that that's not true now and we're sorry.
You know, that's certainly true, but this whole notion that a lot of people until recently, until the 18th or 19th century, thought the earth was flat, you had navigators who, to include Marco Polo, the Portuguese, the, many Europeans, many Chinese, even the Vikings, they knew the earth wasn't flat because yeah. none of them never came home as a result of going sailing over a waterfall edge. And sailing yeah. off into Alpha Centauri or Alpha Rothbardus or wherever the case may be. Yeah. I think that's another conceit where the government rides in and says, we'll set science straight. Yeah, you sure will.
You know, the thing is about the Marxism always likes to go undercover as a Trojan horse, like whether it's the civil rights movement or the hippies or, the environmental movement or education or, you know, food or healthcare. You know, Marxism just likes to sneak in the back door. And the thing is, so many people have been so collectivist and horrible throughout history that Marxism being the childish, childlike idea backed by a bunch of murder seems like a good idea to almost anyone who's being oppressed by someone else. That's the problem.
It's interesting because I look at collectivism and I think that it's an umbrella term for the adult toddler because that's what it's the creed of. And Marxists are probably the most violent adult toddlers who tend to throw tantrums that tend to be lethal. And I do think that they weaponize envy to such an extent that they'll put together these corpse piles in the tens of millions during the 20th century when they really came to the fore. So I agree.
Okay, that's the name of the episode right there. Liberals weaponize envy, or maybe status weaponize envy.
Excellent.
But, you know, I think that there's a redemption here, and we're not quite to the redemption third act yet here, but I'll set it up. I think there's a redemption in that less and less Marxism is seeming like the natural solution to things, and more libertarianism, anarcho-capitalism, voluntarism is spreading as the thing, like everyone's go-to, like, oh, well, no, we should just do this and get rid of it, and the market should take care of it. And even at the point of, like, good friends of mine have kind of a simplistic, childlike view of it, but the ideas are solid. You know, not all my friends. I'm just saying, like, I've heard people who describe it in a way that sounds like the market is magic fairy dust that'll take care of everything. But it will, but there's more to it than that. And we'll be back with redemption in the third act after this trip to the free market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
So this is Redemption in the Third Act with myself, Michael Dean, and Bill Bupert from ZeroGov.com. So we were talking before the break about how Marxism, the filthy, filthy, murderous envy backed with corpse piles of the state, childish, childlike idea, has seemed for about 100 years like the answer to anyone who's oppressed. I can't blame people for saying, well, that makes sense. All we need to do is everybody gets everything and there's no war and there's no want and there's no people who have so much money they can burn it for fuel. It makes sense, but it's wrong.
And fairy tales are just that.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah. And anarcho-capitalism, libertarianism, voluntarianism are not fairy tales. They are accused of that by liberals and by libertarian Republicans or by Republicans, but they're not that, and they are workable, and there's solid mathematical reasons why they are that would, you know, could be a whole 10 show series of why the market could build the roads and why we wouldn't need to live in Somalia and why grandma would not starve without the government and why children would be working less in whorehouses than they are now. A lot of, you know, that's always one like, oh, what kids would do working in whorehouses. Kids work in whorehouses now. Despite
here's the government, here's what I guarantee 100%. What I guarantee 100% is that every member of your audience within earshot of the Michael Dean Freedom Fiend show practices anarchy every evening when they go home, whether they're alone, whether they're with family, whether they're with friends. Because the reason they treat the people around them well isn't because they're afraid of being caged or maimed or killed by the cockroaches. They do it because they have a moral compass that tells them two things. Number one, it's the right thing to do. And number two, it's in my self-interest to be kind and decent to other people because the karmic merry-go-round will come around and I'll be on top instead of being down.
Yeah. And, you know, the people who wouldn't abide by that would either be shot immediately in a home invasion or would starve to death. Now, that's the theory. I actually think that a lot of people who are statists now who would easily become libertarians if it were available easily, I think a lot of them might do better with that shunning of like, you know, people who are bad people would starve to death than a lot of libertarians. Because I've actually seen a lot of libertarians who say like, oh, we don't need government. You know, shunning would take care of it. And then when you shun bad people within the libertarian community, they say, you're ruining the movement. So there's that.
It's so interesting. I'm really looking forward to Fury Road, the new Mad Max movie that's coming out this year. The trailer is fantastic. But I've had a conversation with several folks who have said, you know, this whole notion that without government, it would all be a Mad Max movie. Nothing could be further from the truth. For instance, if every cop in the NYPD had a 94% stoppage in the number of citations and arrests that they acted on a daily basis since those two cops were assassinated, oh, the world would go to hell in a handbasket. Well, guess what? It didn't. And guess what would happen if no cops came to work? Things would get sporty for an hour. And then after that, everything would balance out and settle down.
Sporty. I'd give it 72 hours, but yeah, it would. And you know, Davy Barker says it really well. He said that, you know, the market is like chess. The rules are really easy, but it's very complicated to play. So, you know, saying that the market would take care of things is true. And all that means is that people would provide solutions. But, you know, if the government got out of the way.
Hey, and the government doesn't have this bragging point. Capitalism is the glorious enterprise in which two complete strangers get together, exchange goods and services. They don't unholster their firearms, and they may leave friends or they may leave acquaintances, but they both leave happy if they've sold their goods.
Yeah, and the government tries to get into that and take a cut. Like, think about that. Like, you know, what Nima Vedati used to say is, you know, commerce is an A to B transaction. The government should see their way out of it. I mean, you think about that, like literally, you know, if you abide by the tax rules down to the lowest iota, you know, if you and your wife are sitting around and she hands you some steak and you hand her a book, you know, and then you say, oh, look, we traded as a joke. I mean, literally, you're supposed to pay a tax on that, man. Bill Buford, it's been a great show. It's been great having
Always
you on.
Always an honor.
Statists are people who weaponize envy. We'll be back tomorrow. No, we won't, actually. Derek J. has the day off because he's covering the Silk Road trial in New York City. He got written up in the UK Guardian for that, too. I'll link that. But we'll be back the next day and every day until droned. Repeat until droned. Freedom Fiends, tasing you with liberty daily. Repeat until droned. Worms. Can I get an annelids?
Annelids.